members, and either welcome or welcome back to At Least There's a Dog, a Star Trek Enterprise review podcast in which we will boldly go episode by episode through the Star Trek series that, whatever its flaws, undeniably has the most dog. We are your hosts, Mandy and Josh, and on tonight's show, we will be discussing Season 4, Episode 17, Bound.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was. Season 4, back on track. It's got like 6 episodes to remain that way, and it's not gonna, but at least for this episode, it is back on track.
Does it even have 6 episodes?
I don't know.
I don't think it does.
I've completely lost track of what's going on in this show. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
We know that every time we say, we're going to try to do these more often from now on, and then we do them less often.
That's why I'm not going to say anything that is like life. That. I'm not even going to say it. Not going to say it.
Okay.
But I do still intend to finish out the series in this calendar year.
Yes.
Because, you know, we got to get through it before the founding of the Federation.
When does the Federation get founded again?
It'll be a while. But,
okay.
But yeah, I'd also like to be done
so
before
we got
first contact.
Time. Okay.
Yeah. First contact's coming up a lot sooner.
Okay. Yeah, that's a reasonable goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a... I went into this one with relatively low expectations, which may have had something to do with why I liked it as much as I did. But this is one of those classic episodes that the internet doesn't like because it's fun and the internet hates fun things. Which should immediately tell you, our dear listeners, whether you're going to like it or not.
It was fun. It felt a lot like an original series episode.
Yes, and that's a good thing to feel like.
Like, it felt remarkably like an original series episode.
I mean, they hadn't actually done Orion Slave Girls, like really done Orion Slave Girls since the original series, had they?
That you're correct about that. Well, no, you're not correct about that.
Am I correct or not?
We'll get to it.
Oh, okay. In the meantime, should I tell the people what the episode was about?
Sure.
Alrighty, so this was Bound. The NX-01 is headed to check out a potential starbase location when they are hailed by Baron Harkonnen from Dune in green face paint.
Wait, what?
He looks like Baron Harkonnen.
Oh, he looks like it. Okay, fair
yes.
enough.
Come on, that was a good joke. The Baron, using the nom de guerre Harad Sar, which does sound like something from Dune now that I think about it,
yeah.
is an Orion, and he invites Archer and company to take a little trip with him back to the original series and the days of Orion Slave Girls. As a gift to celebrate their new partnership, 3 very obvious spies board the NX-01 and immediately start making all the men aboard the ship think with the wrong heads. All the men, that is, except Commander Tucker, who is protected from Orion's slave pheromones by the power of Twoov. As the ship heads towards a very obvious trap, Tucker and T'Pol fight to maintain control of the ship over their horny crewmates and the 3 green girls, who aren't entirely what they appear to be. Just mostly. Will they save their ship? Will Archer, Reed, Mayweather, and Phlox be saved from the terrible fate of a second puberty? Can T'Pol please, after 4 freaking seasons, just be captain already? No word on whether the star of the show, Porthos, was affected in any way by the Orion pheromones.
Ooh. Ooh.
Like, I kind of assume that he's been, you know, neutered. I assume that they still listen to Bob Barker in the future about these things. So I don't know whether he's affected by any kind of pheromones at all. But who knows
whether they've
accounted for dogs.
I think you've noticed that from, you know, interacting with dogs, it doesn't really matter if they're nude or not.
It's true.
They still view your leg with a certain
ardor, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true. I guess they did. They were too cowardly to explore that aspect of Orion slave girl pheromones.
You know what? I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
I think they actually explored things a very appropriate amount and they didn't go too far.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been worse if they had gone too far.
It definitely would have been. It also would have been too long.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So, do you want to hear some trivial things?
Lay some trivialities upon me.
All right. So, did you pay any attention to the actresses playing those slave girls?
I know that one of them was, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Sia?
Yeah.
Sia Batten?
Yep. Yep, yep.
Okay.
Do you know
the There are too many vowels in her name.
Yeah, she was playing Navarre.
Yes, the one who talked the most.
Yeah. Did you know that she had another role in Star Trek?
Wasn't she on Deep Space Nine?
She was.
As something?
Yeah, she was Tora Ziyal.
Oh, she was
Gul
Dukat's daughter.
Yeah.
That's why she looked so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had, like, clicked through her Wikipedia page briefly just enough to see that she had been on Deep Space Nine, but I didn't go any further than that.
Yeah. No, Ziyal was a recurring character.
Yeah. No, I remember.
Yeah.
Different makeup this time.
Different makeup.
But she's got a very distinctive facial shape, so I could definitely tell that she looked familiar.
Okay. Yeah. Well, she did a great job. I was curious, like, what's she doing now?
Uh-huh.
Well, she stopped acting, and she's now an interior designer.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Wasn't she also a member of the Pussycat Dolls?
She was.
Okay.
Yeah, something different. With regards to what you were saying, I guess I should have double-checked to make sure it was about the slave girls, but the Orions, I'm not positive it was just slave girls, but the Orions did show up on something after the original series.
I mean, I know the Orions have shown up,
but not Orion, that much.
Orion slave girls have not been a focus.
So here's
since
the fun
the original series.
The thing is, the Orions didn't actually show up at all for over 30 years, like our time.
Well, because they were only in the cage, weren't they?
No, they showed up in a couple other episodes.
Oh, they did?
Yes, they did.
Oh, okay.
But the classic Orion slave girls, the cage.
Yes.
But there were a couple animated series episodes that had them.
Arr, I see.
And then they did not show up again until Enterprise.
Well, that makeup's got to be a pain in the keister, and you don't have to worry about the makeup on an animated series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the makeup's a pain, and also, you know, I think they were, well, for one, I know Roddenberry was trying to keep TNG separate from the original series, and didn't want to just be constantly revisiting the species from the original series.
I guess.
It was what he was doing. But also, it allowed them to not have to worry about any sort of, you know, sexism concerns or anything.
I was going to say, I'm sure at some point the majority of the writer's room was like, that feels a little bit regressive. And yes, they have a point, but I actually thought they did a really good job of not necessarily confronting that in this episode, but allowing it to be present in a way that was clever.
They twisted it in a way that I liked it.
There was one twist, only one, but still one, that I genuinely did not see coming.
Okay. We'll talk about that in a bit. I think so.
Yeah.
I think. I thought it was interesting that they didn't touch them. It's funny, though, because during Deep Space Nine, you may remember at one point, Miles O'Brien had to infiltrate something to do with the Orion Syndicate.
I do not remember this.
That is fine. It wasn't terribly good.
Okay.
Sad, but not good.
That wasn't the episode where he, like, did prison time in his head, was it?
No, that's a different one.
Okay, because that episode was good and also sad and upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to do some infiltration of the Orion Syndicate, but there were no Orions. He didn't see a single one.
Ah. Okay, that's probably for the best, given what we now know about them.
Yeah.
I do have some questions about Lower Decks now, though.
Oh, but the thing is that I realize now just how much this episode was setting up Lower Decks.
Kinda, maybe?
Well, setting up some of the things in Lower Decks.
Setting up some of the things in Lower Decks, but I'm just kind of like, how does anybody get any work done around Tendi? Can she just, like, turn off her Orion pheromones?
She doesn't have them.
Oh, okay.
I think they may have discussed this at some point for some reason, this is something I know. I assume it's because they discussed it.
It seems like a base Lower Decks would remember to cover.
Yeah, some Orion women have the pheromones, but not all of them.
Ah, okay.
And Tendi does not. She maintains her power through sheer skill.
And being royalty.
I mean, she maintains her grip on royalty by, like, being able to, like, catch knives with her feet and stuff.
Ah, okay. And somehow we ended up talking about Deep Space Nine and Lower Decks on a podcast about Enterprise. But these things happen.
Hey, gotta get it in somehow.
I suppose.
Star Trek's a whole world.
We gotta discuss
all of it. And you know what? You know what? We're discussing Deep Space Nine and Lower Decks. We're keeping it all happy here.
It's true. Very true.
We don't have to say anything angrily about, you know, we're not even going to mention his name.
Like,
no,
I could bring up other shows where Orions have appeared, but
you won't.
Why would I do that?
There's no reason to.
No reason whatsoever. Everybody's in a good mood right now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What do you think about the start of this episode?
The start. It's time for Faith of the Start. The segment where we ask ourselves one simple or maybe not simple question on a scale of 1 to 10. How much did the theme song ruin the cold open? What'd you think?
I gave it a 4.
6. Okay.
Yeah, you know, about average amount of ruination.
About average. I gave it a little bit of a tip forward just because it made me laugh, because it was very much like, I'm gonna kill you. It's been a long road. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just used to it at this point. You know, you'd think that...
I think given that it's been like a long 2 years road. Since we watched our last episode of Enterprise, I was a little out of practice in being prepared.
It has been less than 5 months.
I was a little out of practice in being prepared for the jarring transition into Diane Warren.
Hmm. She'll get her Oscar.
Will she?
No.
She should, just so that we can stop this lengthy charade, but
all right, Paramount, make an Enterprise movie.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and have her write a new theme song
or like a whatever she has to do to get this one nominated.
Yep. I mean, it still won't win, but it'll win this time if you say so.
Yep, this time it'll win for sure.
For sure. Pluses and minuses.
Pluses.
So, I'll go first. This episode was directed by Alan Kroeker? Croker?
Yeah.
Kroeker? Something like that.
Kiff's brother.
Yeah, him. and I enjoyed the direction of this episode a lot. It was fittingly trashy. Like, he understood the assignment very well. There was very liberal use of close-ups with wide-angle lenses that gave everything a slightly bugged-out feel. For the whole thing. There were a lot of crotch shots. And not just crotch shots on the girls, but also crotch shots on the male members of the Enterprise crew. Like, there was a scene where Archer was coming into his quarters where his own personal slave girl was waiting for him. And the camera just, like, focuses really hard on his crotch before panning up to his face. And it was like, yes, Alan Kroeker knows what he's doing here. And I laughed at that moment. It was just like, let's have fun and celebrate the kind of sleaziness of this entire premise, which is what it is meant to be.
He's just pointing to the brains behind the operation.
Indeed.
You know, like, you point the camera where the interesting thing is. And right now, all the thinking is going on. You know, it's great when you have an actor who can... it's fun to watch think, and that's where all the thinking is happening.
Very true.
Scott Bakula is thinking very hard in his groin, and this is all being captured on camera.
There was also good use of shaky cam. I don't normally like shaky cam, but it was well used here. It was conservatively used, and used primarily to convey what shaky cam should be used for, which is confusion and chaos. In a place that is normally neither confused nor chaotic, like engineering.
Yeah, I actually had this also written down. He did a very good job of making the direction feel out of balance when the characters felt out of balance.
Mm-hmm. Well, your turn now.
Very cool. I'll just go right to it. That Orion dance... Like, when the two other girls popped out from behind the first, and you're like, wait, there was more than one of them?
Yeah.
Like, that was a really well choreographed dance.
That's on my pluses list, too.
Cool music, too.
Very cool music. Like, they experimented with it in Star Trek V, and now they've gotten it right. There were no fans this time.
I mean, I think these are two different things.
Yes, I know. But the point is, it was a sexy dance.
It was a sexy dance, but also a very interesting one.
Yes.
Like, it was just interesting to watch.
It was fun to watch, aside from watching Archer and Reed's eyeballs fall out into their laps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good job.
Okay, I guess that's me. So I liked the little twist about who the real Orion slaves are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the thing I'm saying. I didn't see that coming. I did not necessarily see it coming that, like, oh, the master-slave relationship is the complete opposite of what we thought it was. I'm not sure I entirely buy it, just given the interactions that we'd seen up to that point, but I do like it. And I liked the silly T'Pol one-liner that it led to at the end.
Mm-hmm. But it... Oh, yeah, that was great. That's the thing that, you know, kind of led to where Lower Decks has been going.
True.
Like, it seems like Orion is largely ruled by the women.
That it does.
I don't think that would have happened if this episode hadn't happened and planted that sort of idea.
Well, good for you, Manny Coto. You laid the groundwork for good things.
And also, like, you know, Manny Coto, we've noticed, he seems to very much love looking into Star Trek's past.
He likes callbacks, and this one hasn't made me nearly as irritated as many of the others have. Maybe because the Orions were not a thing like Sungs, for example, that has already been done to death. Next episode, we will cover the thing that has already been done to death.
Most of the doing to death actually happened to DS9.
I guess. Yeah. Kind of.
But, I think that he did this very well in that it was a callback to it, but also he introduced new ideas to it.
Yeah.
And it was a fun episode. Like, it's goofy. But,
yet again,
this is how you do callbacks.
Yet again on Star Trek, it was a fun episode is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try and make a thing that used to be fun not fun. Let the fun thing remain goofy and fun.
Mm-hmm. Where were we?
You.
All right. I will go with a pretty big one. I actually liked what they did with Trip and T'Pol.
This is the most I've liked the two of them for at least a season, possibly more than a season.
This was... Yeah. I was annoyed at how weird and artificial their relationship had been becoming.
And how can't spend more than 2 minutes in a room without just griping at each other.
Well, that's more recent, but yes, that too. And this one, they were fun together.
They were. I really enjoyed the new, understated, kind of humorous approach to their feelings for each other. Like, I don't know how, on a grand scheme, I feel about this whole when you fall in love with a Vulcan, you and the Vulcan, like, gradually turn into each other thing. Or I guess it's when you mate with a Vulcan.
Now, is that what the, are those lampreys or anglerfish?
With the anglerfish, the male gets absorbed into the female. I think the implication was, like, a dual anglerfish effect here.
An Ouroboros of anglerfish?
Yes, where you slowly get... Is that our episode title?
Oh, no.
Where you get slowly absorbed into each other. Also, given other Vulcan-human relationships we've seen, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but whatever.
Angler-Boros fish.
Angler-Boros fish. Okay. But I appreciated that their reaction to realizing that this had happened was not to, like, freak out or weep or fall into each other's arms or gripe some more, but was just to be like, okay.
I don't know if I should be relieved or really worried. I think that was the line.
It was just like kind of an eye roll of, okay, I guess this is our lives now. And it was like, good for you two. You're actually kind of being mature about this.
And I liked that T'Pol in the end finally just said what she felt.
And went in for the smooch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, about time, children, about time. Can we stop now?
I think we're good. I think we're good now.
Okay. Please, writers. Much appreciated. Love us. Okay, well, that was my other big one. Oh, but speaking of love, I liked the slightly homoerotic scene in the weight room between Malcolm Reed and Travis Mayweather.
Oh, I had feelings about that scene.
Were they plus feelings or minus feelings?
Oh, they were very confused feelings. I was feeling things in multiple directions at the same time.
That's fair.
I don't know if I could describe it in a single
way. Travis works his way through hormones with pain.
And very heavy weights.
And very heavy weights.
And then Tripp is like...
No, Malcolm.
Sorry, and then Malcolm's like, I think I want to be like Travis.
I mean, yeah, fair enough. He is ripped.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad that scene did not turn out to be what I was expecting it to be, which I was expecting that, like, Travis had gone to the weight room so he could bulk up to impress the Orion girls more. And then it turned out to be, no, he's in the weight room because he's avoiding the Orion girls. And since Reed has to remain faithful to his photon torpedoes, he decides to use that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, their conversation amused me greatly. And the two of them don't get enough scenes together. And I enjoyed it a lot.
That was, yeah, it was a very enjoyable scene.
Is that all?
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Very minor. I like that they reduced the gravity. It's dumb, but hey, it didn't have any effect on the show at all. But
if
you remembered, they had grav plating.
Yeah, if you're able to do that, that seems like a cool trick that you could use from time to time.
Yeah. Like, if you need more power, why are they diverting it from something like... life support or the shield or something. No.
Let everybody lose a few pounds.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt you. Nobody's going to float away at 90% gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good trick. I only have one left, and it's also a fairly small one. Nice spread on the Orion ship.
Oh, the food?
Yeah, the food and the drinks, that like primary colors martini that that Archer had. It looked like an actual... tasty feast that they had laid out there. The Orions know how to treat their guests.
Yeah, they do. I just have some little lines and stuff written out here. That's where the matter and antimatter mix? I just thought that was very funny.
I had forgotten that line till just now, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It was just like she's, pretending to be impressed by the... By Kelby, the engineer, who I am glad that they remembered existed.
No comment.
Fair enough. I also liked the moment where Travis saves the day by pointing out to Archer that the other ship is moving off and leaving.
He doesn't get to do that very often.
I love that this was a true ensemble episode.
Yeah, it's been, again, a while since we had a good one of those. They're always the goofy episodes, too. Maybe this is part of why I love the goofy episodes so much, because they actually do use the whole cast.
Mm-hmm. Just a shout-out to Jolene Blaylock for... I really liked her, T'Pol's facial expressions a lot of the time.
Yeah, acting-wise, she was the MVP this episode.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also Tripp at the end just obviously looks like exhausted from this whole thing after having shot most of the bridge crew. just looks at the slave girls and she's like, oh, save it.
Sometimes you gotta solve problems with guns.
Although, should we start going into the minuses?
I mean, I'm out. So if you're out, I guess so.
Although I did think it was a little bit maybe unwise to then go into the turbo lift with three of them. And one of him?
He knew he was immune.
Well, he's immune to their pheromones.
He's got a gun.
Yeah, but there are three of them. And, he doesn't know what they're capable of. Maybe they know karate.
Yeah, I suppose. Maybe not the wisest thing he's ever done, but as you said, he was very tired at that point.
Yes, he was.
And it seems like nothing terrible happened to him.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think the guy playing Harad Sar is a bad actor, but I thought he looked very uncomfortable in his costume and makeup.
It didn't look comfortable.
No, and it was to agree that I found it distracting. And, like, can you just... I know you all are on both time and money budgets, but can you just, like, refit the guy? He looked like he couldn't move his arms. He was at his best when he was on the view screen and talking to them through, like, space Skype. Also, why did he have stuff sticking out of his face? Is that an Orion thing?
I assumed it was some form of jewelry, but I'm not sure.
I guess. Like, he had a needle sticking out of his face, and I found it very distracting.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Just, like, I don't know. The makeup was so much better on the women.
Yeah.
Maybe he sweats too much.
I liked some of his lines.
Yeah, like again.
His very vaguely threatening stuff. I guess that's a positive.
Again, I didn't think the actor did a bad job. I just thought just like something about this guy's screen presence is very uncomfortable.
Okay, fair enough. Travis and Reed in the weight room. It was funny. It was fun to watch, but it was really dumb.
I'll have you say nothing bad about that scene. It was a perfect scene.
Also, I don't think that was very convincing weightlifting.
No. But it was still a perfect scene.
Okay.
Now, these are valid criticisms. I just loved that scene so much.
Fair enough.
I forgive it for being stupid.
Fair enough.
So it was, for the most part, a true ensemble episode, but Hoshi still had nothing interesting to do. And part of the reason that Hoshi had nothing interesting to do was that they decided that the effect of Orion pheromones on the women should be the women get kind of, like, cranky and...
Headache
and depressed.
I think mostly headache.
And I think I might have enjoyed it a little bit more if, like... Why not have the women have the same reaction as the men? Like, I know it's the early 2000s and you can't have, like, you know, women making out with each other. But you could at least
have... You can't even have women suggesting they might be interested in each other, unfortunately.
No, but you could at least have the women display the same kind of, like, brainless aggression. I think that would have been a little bit more fun.
Yeah, and I suspect that if this episode had been made maybe 10 years later... They would have done something like
but
that.
But it also wouldn't have been any fun because new track, so I'll take the trade-off.
Okay. Fair enough. I thought this was really funny. I put it as a minus, even though I just laughed about it. Phlox gives a sedative to Kelby.
Then he gives himself the sedative and then he says,
yeah, I've been having... It's messed up my sleep cycle. I have to use stimulants now. And then he gives himself the sedative that he was just holding.
I was hoping they were going to make that, like, intentional.
And then he just falls
down. And then just have him pass out because he's so exhausted. He can't tell the difference between a stimulant and a sedative anymore. I would have loved that.
As it was, great.
It was just careless. I was annoyed that the third Orion girl didn't talk.
Did she not actually say anything?
I don't think she said anything. Like, why bother having three of them if you're only going to give two of them anything to do?
I mean, the dance was really good with three.
The dance was really good, but like...
You need the symmetry.
There were enough lines that you could have split them up a little bit more.
Yeah, I honestly could barely tell them all apart, so...
Or just have three girls in the dance, but only send two of them over to the ship.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. She just kept being there and completely silent, and I found that annoying.
All right. While I was happy to see that they remembered that Kelby existed, I wasn't really a big fan of his character and how he was used, and that was a very silly fistfight sequence.
I always hesitate to say, like, that's a bad actor because sometimes an actor has a bad day or... doesn't connect with the role or whatever, but he's bad in this role.
he's
it's not a well-written character, but the actor's adding nothing to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. that in case anybody couldn't tell by things like Connor Trenier remaining in the opening credits, that character should have been a clear indicator to everybody that don't worry, Tucker's not going to be gone for long.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Normally I do try not to nitpick little plot stuff too much, but Archer, you were in a relatively uncompromised state when Phlox told you there's a powerful pheromone cocktail affecting the judgment of everyone on board, except for Commander Tucker and Commander T'Pol. Why at that moment did you not relieve yourself of duty and put T'Pol in charge?
Yeah.
Like, you know, competent Archer might have done. Competent Archer didn't show up a whole lot this episode.
No, he didn't.
In part because of, you know, pheromones. But on the occasions when maybe competent Archer could have shown up, he also didn't.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Seriously, just let T'Pol be captain.
Yes, dear.
You know I'm right.
I know you're right, but, like, you're gonna be on this,
They got a few more episodes where they can do this.
I'm not holding my breath.
Me neither.
I do not expect Archer to, you know, disappear in the finale and leave T'Pol in charge. He's not going to go into a wormhole or anything
like
that.
Scott Bakula is not going to quit the show 3 episodes before the finale.
Nope. I don't think we're going to get to see Captain T'Pol.
All right, you got anything else?
Not really. The cold open was boring.
Yes.
But that's not that interesting.
It was a very boilerplate cold open.
Yeah. No, I spent most of the episode with a smile on my face.
Same.
Can't really complain
much. I laughed a lot. It was a lot of fun. Good job. Yeah. Good job, guys.
You have anything else?
Nope. All right. Time for awards.
All right.
So for the Mayweather report, I gave it to Hoshi.
I gave it to Phlox.
I considered Phlox, but I gave the edge to Hoshi because Hoshi really had nothing interesting to do. John Billingsley at least got to act a little bit.
Yeah, but I thought it was not that interesting.
I guess
he got to act sleepy.
There was a little bit of a missed opportunity with Phlox, wasn't
there?
Yes,
there was. I felt that, like, no offense to Hoshi, Orlando Park. I thought that Phlox was the most underutilized. Even if he had more lines than her, like, she did have lines. She did a few things. Yeah, she was underutilized, but
no, it's true. And especially given Phlox's previously stated attitudes towards sex, there were some opportunities here.
Yeah. And so, you know.
Okay, no, you're right.
I don't think Linda Park is going to mind if we give this one to Phlox.
Nah, Hoshi gets it often enough. Okay,
yay!
Fair enough.
All right.
Yay, Phlox, I guess. Okay, and then for the Kirk Award, every show we bestow the James Tiberius Kirk Award on the character who spends the episode keeping the Star Trek legacy alive by doing the best William Shatner impersonation. Like, the obvious choice here is Tucker. The one problem being that Tucker did not sexy times with any of the Orion slave girls.
I, you know, it happens almost every episode, but I do think it goes to Archer still.
Really?
For pulling a very convincing William Shatner under the influence of aliens.
Point. All right. Sounds good.
Who are you going to give it to?
Like I said, Tucker is playing the decisive commander role here.
He's the hero,
But Tucker resists the pull of random alien women who might give him space-bound STDs.
No, but Archer does too. He resists the exact same amount that Kirk would have.
Which is not very much.
No. He resists more than, like, Kelby does.
Yeah, but
you know, he gets a call from T'Pol, and he drags himself away to go get the call. He is being heroic, but not too heroic.
Okay, fine. Archer it is.
I'm sorry. I'm just
You don't
right.
have to apologize. No, you're correct. Okay, is that a wrap?
That's a wrap.
Okay. As always, thank you for listening. If you are enjoying this, please tell all your friends and family to join the crew. If you're really enjoying this, please consider leaving us a rating or review or signing up for a subscription on the podcast platform of your choice. If you would like to tell us how we have brightened your day or send us some ideas for the show, shoot us an email at leasttheresadog@gmail.com. And if you are watching along with us, next viewing assignment is the episode In a Mirror Darkly, Part 1. I can already tell you I'm going to like that one less than I like this one.
I'm just waiting for you to be like pleasantly surprised by it.
I'm not withholding judgment on this one before I've seen it.
Okay.
Anyway, take care of yourselves, and until next time, remember to go wherever your heart will take you.
Bye.
Bye.